Now that the royalty is here, it's welcome to 3 p.m. on the first day of Tech Ed North America 2013. I hope Tech Ed's going well for you guys so far. You having a good Tech Ed? Yeah? You excited about New Orleans and it's nice and muggy outside? So my name is Larry Lieberman, and I'm a product manager at Microsoft in the Windows Phone team. I'm going to talk today about the phone development platform. How many application developers do we have with us today? Quite a few of you. How many of you have built applications for the phone? And almost as many, but not quite as many. This is going to be a very high-level talk, but I'm going to talk conceptually at a high level about some of the underpinnings and some of the decision-making that went into the way things work on phone. So that might be interesting for you. If you're looking for deep, deep, deep technical detail, though, I just want to alert you ahead of time. We're not going to be doing that here. There are some other sessions that are going to be coming up where that is going to be done. This is going to try to give that big, high-level picture about what application development is on Windows Phone and why we made the decisions we made and what that means for you, particularly in the enterprise. And I am going to try to pull it back for enterprise developers, since I know that most folks here who are doing application development are in the enterprise. You know, it's interesting to note, for the last few years, I've been on Windows Phone team and then the Windows Mobile team before that since 2004, so I've sort of seen kind of a long journey. When Windows Phone came out in 2010, we had a very, very consumer focus, which I'm sure many of you knew. The decision-making at that point was that, you know, we needed a product that had this consumer appeal. Enterprise users are consumers too, and that was sort of job one before we came back. And as a result, we sort of lost a lot of the enterprise capabilities that we had in Windows Mobile. But with Windows Phone 8, I'm really happy to say, I think that we've removed most of the barriers to entry for most of the things enterprises need. And we really have a great product that should satisfy most of the needs of enterprise users. And not only that, it's extremely compelling from a consumer perspective. I don't think, our phone has been receiving a tremendous amount of critical acclaim. We won the Engadget Smartphone of the Year award for the Nokia Lumia 920. We've got several surveys showing that people who use Windows Phone are more happy with it than they are with other phones that they've used. And we're seeing increasing adoption globally right now, where we're even showing greater market penetration in certain countries than iPhone in about 10 countries right now. And generally countries where those phones are unsubsidized. And that's just the thing, see, because with Windows Phone, we're trying to create a great high-end experience, but we're also trying to make it available in a wider range of form factors, including more affordable form factors, without diminishing the experience. And that's something Android hasn't been able to do, because you can certainly go get free Android phones globally, but they don't run many of the apps. And we've done a tremendous amount of work in 7, 7, 5, and 8 to try to ensure that the phones that are on the more affordable hardware run all the apps. And so in cases where they don't, we're doing work to make sure that the end user experience is appropriate, that you can't see apps. There are some super high-end games that aren't going to run on some of the lower-end phones, and we're doing a lot of work to protect the experience there, because that's the underlying principle that went into everything we did in Windows Phone. Great end user experiences. We often phrase this as the end user is king, and you may have heard us say that several times, so I won't say it too much. But that led to the development platform, and we'll be talking a lot about that today. So there's sort of three sections I'm going to talk about as I go through this. The first thing I'm going to talk about, and what I want you to take away from this is that just at a very high level, I want to convey sort of what the distinctive aspects of our platform are. If you're currently building applications for any other Microsoft technology, it is so easy for you to leverage those skills to deliver something on phone, especially if you're building for Windows 8, because and building XAML apps for Windows 8 or DX native apps for Win 8, because the convergence that's going on right now. We'll talk about that a little bit as well, the convergence that's going on between Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. So with that said, like I mentioned, we're going to talk sort of about three areas. Before we go into that, though, I did want to highlight some of the other sessions here. I want to do this up front because, like I said, we aren't going to be doing this deep technical dive here today. I want to make sure that you guys know that ahead of time. You don't have, you know, I don't thwart your expectations. But there are some other ones here later on this week. Specifically, I want to point out the build for both Win 8 and Windows Phone 8 on Tuesday. If you're interested at all in leveraging the same code to target both, my colleague Matthias Shapiro is going to be spending some time. He's done a ton of work in this area. There's a number of different practices that can really maximize your code reuse because if you use the same tools, you use the same programming languages, you can use the same technologies like XAML, C#, et cetera, C++. And the other one that I really wanted to point out, so on Wednesday we have a C and C++ session, and that is going to be focused not on the game aspect of it, but actually on the code reuse aspect of it, because it's very easy to take legacy code in C and transport it across project types. And so in what a lot of people have done, including, and this is actually what we did with SQLite. You may have seen some of our demos around SQLite. SQLite was compiled to C, and so that becomes a component that you can leverage in both phone projects as well as in Windows projects. And then there's a session just on SQLite on Thursday. And so those three sessions, as well as the networking one on Tuesday, the networking technologies, obviously, there really are no interesting apps, very few interesting apps today that do not leverage networking technologies in some respect, particularly like an HTTP stack. So you see most modern, compelling applications are leveraging real-time data off the web in some respect. Our own Andy Wigley, who I don't think is here right now, I think he stepped out. Andy is going to be going into that, and obviously quite the expert. Highly recommend that if you haven't seen Andy talk before. Okay. So I'm really not going to harp on this. This is something we're showing in all our sessions because we want to reiterate on it, but Windows Phone is built for business, and really, what this goes back to is the underpinning of Microsoft itself. Because what is the focus of Microsoft historically been? We focused on building ecosystems more than anything else, building ecosystems in which our partners can thrive, in which we can thrive, and enterprise being one of those partnerships, being one of those ecosystems. The enterprise, you can think of enterprise as an ecosystem. Windows Phone, you know, certainly, no question about it, when we started with Windows Phone, there were some limitations that impacted its ability to be adopted in the enterprise. I feel like I can firmly state to you today that those are gone. And we have a number of sessions there that I showed that go in depth in that about deployment, device management, moving to the Windows 8 Common Core. All of those things radically improve the usage. They actually denote what an amazing tool this is for the enterprise. And productivity is a key piece of this, because with Office 365, certainly the unquestioned leader in productivity suite, and combined with SharePoint and Office 365 and all of the Office utilities, applications, PowerPoint, Word, Excel, round tripping, and so forth, you have the ability to be connected in a way that simply is not feasible on other platforms. The third point is what we're really going to be talking about here today. This is a platform for mobile apps unlike any other. C#, VB, .NET, and .NET Framework in general are amazingly, very, very largely adopted globally and have been since their inception in around 2000, 2001. We fully support those technologies. A big part of what we did in Windows Phone was leverage the strengths that Microsoft had developed across all of its developer assets in building a platform that could be adopted immediately without any education. So we knew that we had a lot of developers in this space. We wanted to create a platform that people could come to right away. The fourth item is this new piece here, and Rob talked about this a little bit in the last session. There's going to be some more sessions directly on this, but certainly application management, device management, are critical components of any solution in the enterprise. And Windows Phone has arrived. As of Windows Phone 8, we now have full support for application and device management. The Common Core and the security architecture, just to mention this one more time, obviously moving to this shared Windows 8 core meant that Windows Phone got the benefit of years and years and years of security testing and evolution that underwent, that the ND kernel underwent. So if you think about just the entire decade, the entire time from 1995 to 2013, what happened with NT in terms of security, a battle-tested kernel that led to iteration over iteration improving the security architecture and design, and all of that now has accrued to Windows Phone as a result of moving to this common core. Windows Phone, as Windows Mobile before it, had been based on Windows CE. And Windows CE had forked from NT back a very long time ago. And so, you know, moving these things back together means that both products now have that common core, and there are a lot of other benefits that accrue as well, which we'll talk about as we go. So, like I mentioned, we're going to have sort of three sections here into this talk. First, I'm going to talk a little bit about Windows Phone itself. Because even though I know most of you have seen Windows Phone, and maybe many of you have a Windows Phone, I want to just talk a little bit about some of the underlying core principles that drove the design, development, and release of the product, because they are so fundamental to application development on the phone, to what we've provided developers in terms of applications on the phone. The second thing I'm going to talk about is the experiences that developers can create on the phone and how those are unique and different from what is possible on other platforms. We're going to look at a bunch of different apps that have been released as well. I have some demonstrations. I'm going to walk through some other applications that have done some really compelling things. And then the third piece, I'm going to actually walk through all the different components of the development process, from a developer portal to the tools, profiling, testing, and submission on our portal. I'll cover the gamut, and we'll get a high-level picture about what developers commonly do. Many of you are developers, so you know a lot of this. But I will be giving it sort of a unique Windows Phone angle. To move back to Windows Phone, though, you know, we started Windows Phone first released in 2010, but if you go back to 2007, there was this huge shift in the market, obviously, that took the world by storm, a new paradigm of mobile computing, very touched-based, very well optimized for a mobile screen in a way that hadn't been done before. And we were certainly late to the party, as many others were. But once we realized this, a big concerted effort was undertaken to say, you know, what is going on here, and what could we do to leapfrog what's going on? Because if you look at what the phones look like, in fact, most of these other phones look like this today, you see grids and grids of icons. And certainly that kind of harkens back to, you know, the old Windows interfaces. If you can go back to Windows 3.1, old versions of Mac OS where you first saw, or Xerox PARC even, where you saw the icon. But now, you know, users who are using a tiny mobile device drill into experiences by clicking on an icon, and applications get installed on these devices as individual icons too. And what this means is that, you know, certainly the big benefit here, what happened around 2008 with the first dedicated application stores, you had a uniform distribution mechanism. And that didn't exist before. That was a huge development because all of a sudden, an end user had one place to go and they could instantly get software onto that device. You know, I don't know how many of you remember, there used to be like brick and mortar stores where you bought software. That certainly doesn't apply in today's, you know, world. And the app store, the application store is part of why that is. That solved the discovery problem somewhat because you could now discover the application. What it didn't solve is the engagement problem. A vast majority of applications, way, way large majority of applications on every platform get installed, used once or twice, and never touched again. This isn't really as much of an issue for enterprise software in the case where you're working B2B or B2E, where you're building something that's used in the line of business. But it certainly is an issue when you're publishing application software for in a consumer manner. So, you know, we looked at this and said, what could we do? So the idea, as you've seen, was Windows Phone. And Windows Phone 8 here, you know, with the new live tiles, the tile is sort of the cornerstone of this metaphor. The idea being, you want it to be personal. You want the phone to be customized. You want it to be relevant. You want it to be the things that person cares about. And obviously, it's connected. It's getting real-time data off the internet. But the idea of the tile is that it's a way to customize the phone with the information you care about in a very personal manner, but it still has a uniform design to it. So, you know, you don't have the wild, wild west insanity of widgets that are all over the place and very different. And we had a lot of research showing that the average person, while widgets are very, very cool and appeal to a lot of the geeks like us, the average person doesn't necessarily enjoy them. So we wanted to build a phone that was sort of, and you may have heard this, and I sound totally like a marketing guy now, the phone for the rest of us, the most personal smartphone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it is sounds sort of like marketing stuff, but the point is, this is really the notion that underlay, you know, the decision-making that went on here in the design, was how do you create this, you know, personalization and yet maintain some level of uniformity. That makes sense. And the answer was the live tile. And so we created these live tiles, and we gave developers the ability to create these live tiles too. And one of the notions here, so I mentioned that we want to create outstanding end user experiences. But the other key piece of this is that we were always saying the end user is king. You don't make decisions for the end user. You don't change things for the end user. You don't override MIME types like in the old days when every time you installed an app, it would steal a MIME type on your Windows 95 desktop, and you'd have like 57 applications fighting for owning PDF and so forth. You don't do that, and you don't let apps just widely spam your start screen with tiles. So it's an interesting tension. And this tension is at the heart of Windows Phone, this tension between personalization and the end user benefit and the end user getting that personalized, relevant experience and that uniformity, that's predictable, relatable experience. And the same thing holds true for the developer. We give the developer a wide, unique set of ways to engage with the user, but we don't let them spam the user. And this is why we have, so our app store requires certification. And if you look at our app store, you see the same duality, because on the one end, you have Apple with an extremely rigid app store process that many, many developers complained was arbitrary and would reject things and not tell you why, would take many weeks. Now, they've made lots and lots of strides since the vast majority of those complaints took place, but still, it's a very, very opaque thing. There's not a lot of visibility into exactly what goes on there. On the other end of the spectrum, you have Android, which has no certification process. And what's the result of no certification process? It means there's no reasonable expectation for the end user that those apps have any level of quality. And as a result, you see lots and lots of press about people don't buy apps on Android. And that's in turn led to the development of these new freemium models, which is another interesting thing we'll talk about in a minute. But the fact is, you know, you've got the spectrum. We're trying to hew a middle path, build great outstanding end user experiences, give developers an environment in which there is a reasonable expectation of quality, means more work for the developer because we have to certify the apps, but it means also greater potential to sell applications. A middle path. And there's a lot of this tension, duality, and then sort of like picking a middle path that kind of fits in here. Now, Windows Phone is really making a dent. It may not seem like it, but if you look at it at any one moment, it's been a kind of a very slow process. But I wanted to share, like I said, we won Engadget Reader Choice, PC Magazine, you know, said that we bested Apple and Android in the reader poll. We won design awards. We've got a lot of critical acclaim. And a lot of people, you know, the first thing any developer says is, how many have you sold? And it's not an instantaneous process. We're doing This gets to another point I want to speak to in a minute. It has to do with reach and global reach, because I think I touched on this just a little bit. We're trying to create great experiences that reach out to more affordable devices, like I said. And thus, in a lot of the world, phones aren't subsidized by operators. We're finding that Windows Phone is actually performing really, really well, where we're actually number one phone in 10 markets right now globally. We're surpassing BlackBerry in 35 markets, including the United States right now. So if you've seen some of the recent data, and then today, just today, let's see if I've got this here. Yeah, here it is. Kantar Research released that Windows Phone 4.1 in the 3 months. Is this the one from today? No, this isn't the one from today. This is from April. So back in April, we had this. But there was another one which was like 5.7% today. 5.6, here it is. 5.6% share in the US over the last quarter. So look, I'm not crowing about 5.6%, but it's something like it's an enormous growth over the last quarter. So we are 41. Where's the actual percentage? I don't see it here. But here it is. So ending April, we moved to 5.6%. So it's just been a slow journey, but we definitely feel like we're on the right track. And if you look at the bigger picture in terms of our alignment with Windows on the tablet and the fact that we're driving to a converged ecosystem, Windows 8 just having announced 100 million licenses sold, very, very happy with the rate of adoption there. We feel that this is certainly a journey that in no way are we going to be moving away from. Now, I mentioned this common paradigm, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in a minute. I'm spending a lot of time here, and I hope that's okay, because I just want to iterate on this just a tiny bit. Windows 8 on the tablet, this was at the end of 2011, they unveiled Windows 8, the new touch interface for Windows 8. And, we were extremely excited and had been working with them for some time on taking the work that had happened in Windows Phone and applying it out to a larger form factor. And, we were both starting with the same. So there's just an enormous benefit here for end users in terms of having a paradigm for interacting with a touch device that leverages the same principles, because a user who's using a Windows 8 tablet will be able to use a Windows Phone and vice versa with very, very little difficulty. And we give developers a very similar set of design patterns to use when building these application experiences. And I want to go into those application experiences. And like I said, here's some data that I just wanted to share with you. This is from Flurry a little while ago. App retention, this is the amount someone uses an application after installing it over, and this is months, over a series of months. And that 12 months here, their surveys have been showing for their data that they aggregate enormous amount of analytical data. And most of their research data is showing about 4% of applications continue to be used after 12 months. And so only 4%. I mean, that's enormous amount of decay in terms of the applications that stick. And what that means for developers is that perhaps the challenge is building a contextually relevant... Well, first of all, look, certainly I wish it wasn't true, but as in life, most applications are not outstanding, right? It's just you look at the realm of work product of everyone in the world, and not every application is outstanding. And so, of course, some of this is attributable to that. But there is the issue of building an application experience that does something really, really well. But the secondary issue is driving a relationship with the user and maintaining that relationship. And this is something that has been a prime focus of the Windows Phone platform, specifically addressing this issue. And the way that we try to do that is by giving the developer mechanisms to drive a contextually relevant exposure for their application over the lifetime, the life cycle of the app. And tiles are part of this. So let's go take a look at some of these. I've got my phone set up here. That's not my phone. This is my phone. And this is, so I'm doing some video out here. This is, I know the first question will be, can I do that on my phone? And because usually whenever we show this over the last several years, people have said, oh, when is that going to be publicly available to show your phone this way? And it's unfortunately not going to be. It's a very dull, boring, legal-related, long set of answers that I won't go into. But we're not able to provide this publicly. But the beauty is that I can show this now today to talk to you about some of the benefits of our platform. The first thing you see on the screen is a customized lock screen. And most folks have, most application platforms have some type of customized lock screen. What we have, again, following the paradigm I mentioned before, it's structured and yet personalized. We have several sets of data here that can be customized. The picture can be customized. The large notification text here can be customized. And then underneath, you also have spots for what we call quick icons that show you status of things like email, missed phone calls, etc. We also have this feature called Kids Corner. How many of you are familiar with Kids Corner? Have you seen Kids Corner? Kids Corner is a feature whereby even though your phone is locked, you can set up a set of apps that are available to unlocked states. So you can set up a Kids Corner for your child. This is my daughter. And they can go in here and shouldn't be showing that. I'm not sure what's wrong with that. So they can go in to the Kids Corner and see just the apps that you've configured for them. And there's also an API here so that developers can tell if their application is running in Kids Corner. And Pandora, for example, has leveraged Kids Corner so that they won't play explicit lyric music. So there's things that can be done here. And they can customize the color, but they can't go in and buy books on Amazon or order clothing from Nordstrom or what have you, spend tons of money ordering apps and so forth, buying apps. It's a restricted area. It's another way that we've allowed the phone to be customized in this structured manner to allow kids to play with your phone, because we think that's a scenario that was very attractive to a certain set of folks. Now, if you look at my start screen, you'll see it's customized with tiles that show the information I care about. We have the current weather. This is an application called Weatherflow that has a nice large tile. We have three sizes of tiles. We had two before, and developers could only use one prior to Windows Phone 8. In Windows Phone 8, we've opened up three to developers and a whole new set of tile templates so that it's much easier for developers to create different types of tiles than they ever could before. Back in, prior to Windows Phone 8, a developer could create any tile they want as long as they composed the bitmap for the image themselves in their application. And so that oftentimes meant a little bit of additional complexity if you wanted to compose something like what you're seeing in this weather tile here. In fact, that is an image that that developer composes as part of the background agent. So that's a little bit more of a challenging task. Some developers just wanted the ability to have a tile that had a big number on it, like the missed phone call icon that we have. And so we created a new template for that we exposed to developers. And we also have a new template called the cycle tile, which lets you have images cycle that you download in your background agent. And then you also see a couple other things here. Here's local traffic. And so a periodic background agent will update this traffic map. This is my people hub here, and I'm going to show that in just a second, but a number of other things too. Before I go into the third-party apps, I want to show you a little bit of the first-party experiences that I think really encapsulate these core values, the people hub being one of them. Because the people hub, you know, it took this notion of just a contact list and asked itself, you know, and back in the day before mobile devices, you know, contacts was an application. It wasn't part of the operating system. When you came to mobile devices, even in Windows Mobile, we knew that there were a certain set of applications that were like a critical component of a mobile device, and contacts was one of them. But we're taking it to the next level here by saying, what are all the things you'd want to do with that list of people? I don't want to just see the list of people and be able to call them. Although we have that functionality, I can actually jump around in my list very easily with this control. This is the long list selector control. A vast majority of these controls are now available for developers to very, very easily consume in their own applications. So we've made it very easy for developers to leverage these same UI patterns without any additional work. Anyway, but the main thing that we're doing here is this isn't just a list of contacts. It's actually concatenated from all the different services that I've configured. So if you go down here, you'll see I have my Microsoft account that was formerly known as your Live ID, but I also have LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and my Office 365 email as well. And so this is concatenating all that information and matching them together. So I see one item. So I've got a contact. This is my wife, and you can see across the top there that this information came from Hotmail, my Office 365 Microsoft account, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And I can see all the contact information for this person concatenated, and I can do all these operations you'd expect here: call, text, chat, call a different number, write on Facebook, send email, map work address. But if I also go over, this is called the pivot control. The pivot control allows very quick access to rich, filtered, dynamic views of content. So here's the profile, but here's what's new. And what's new is showing me the social networking activity for this person. Photos is showing all the photos posted on any of those social networking services. History is showing all the communication history, be it text message, email. You'll also see missed phone calls. Visual voicemail will show up here as well. So we're creating a streamlined approach suitable for the mobile device in a compelling sort of interactive manner with these subtle animations, which are interesting. So here's what's new: all the social networking activity concatenated together for everyone. And then recent is showing who you've looked at recently and contacted recently. The final one here, which is very interesting, rooms and groups. Groups is where you can just put together a set of people and then see that set of information and contact that set of people all at once. But rooms, this new feature in Windows Phone 8, is even more compelling, because what Rooms does is it gives you the ability to very quickly, it configures dynamically on the fly in the back end, a SkyDrive space storing shared notes, your membership information. You can have messaging with this group, and you can have a calendar that you share, and photos too. So this is tying together everything that we offer in one. So it will automatically generate this room, which is essentially a folder on SkyDrive that everyone can access directly from the phone or through a web browser online or on any other device with a web browser too. The People Hub in many ways encapsulates the cornerstone values of Windows Phone, and so that's why I spent that time on it. But the last thing I want to show is just the email, because I think this use of pivot control, I think my password changed here, but this pivot control here that shows just unread or flagged or urgent encapsulates this value as well, or all. You know, being able to very quickly get to just unread or flagged or urgent like that, that actually is a data filtering paradigm that's applicable to many, many different types of scenarios. And that's why we make a pivot application so easy to use on the phone itself. Now, if you look at third-party applications and the way that they've leveraged these features, there's a wide gamut of different types, but some of the most compelling ones, certainly this weather application here, Weatherflow, which you can set this as your lock screen too. But what it's doing here is, you know, I'm seeing the weather, and it's got two different views. It's got a view that's more a pictographic one, and then sort of a more phone design style-ish one. And here you've got across the top, you've got time and then date on the bottom. But then I can swipe and I see different cities. And it's a little bit different. They've played with it leverages some of the same design system, but they've done some of their own things too. And that's okay. It's not required that you use the same fonts. It's not required that you use the same colors. It's not required that you be black or white. We used to get a lot of criticism, oh, everything's black and white. Not required. There's all sorts of things you can do. The New York Times here is using a different font. They're using their signature New York Times font. And it works, and yet it's still a very metro-y paradigm where you can swipe left and right to see the different articles. I'm also in a panorama here, And the thing that they're doing, which is particularly interesting, is you'll know how they load these things on the fly as you go, so that from performance purposes, they're not loading things all up at once. A lot of other interesting things here. There's a stock list from Bloomberg. This is an application called Map Wallpaper, which I think is really interesting. It will configure a map for your lock screen based on where you are and update it on a periodic basis with a background agent. You can do this with traffic, I think I already have that one set, and you'll get a lock screen like that that shows you the current traffic where you are if you want that to be your lock screen. Got a thermostat, so the Nest thermostat, someone wrote an app. I can see that there's no one at home right now. I could go in here and change the temperature at home if I wanted to. You know, that's not necessarily unique to Windows Phone, but the principles there are that these types of applications are very, very easily to execute on in Windows Phone, just like they are anywhere else. And to bring home the point that our design system doesn't require that everything look like black and white. You know, companies that have distinct brands can brand themselves and still leverage our paradigm. You'll see our new Facebook app. This is the beta, the new one. It looks very much like the Facebook application on other platforms, and yet it still maintains some of this paradigm here where you actually are seeing something very much akin to a pivot control, and they've got the application bar across the bottom here like this, and yet it looks and feels very much like their experience on other platforms. So, we're not completely rigid on this, and in fact, we don't impose our design guidelines as part of the certification requirement. That's certainly not something that we want to do. We don't want to police things at that level, but we do want applications that fit with the phone, and we think that applications that leverage these features will end up building a better relationship with users on our phone. You know, I also wanted to mention here about plugging into the phone in contextual ways. You know, certainly tiles and lock are a key part of this. One of the most compelling ways an application can plug into the phone is through the camera. And so in Windows Phone 8, we provide developers now the ability to extend the camera viewfinder itself through a feature called Lenses. And if I have an application that leverages the camera viewfinder, I can actually denote myself as a lens, and then the user can click on this Lens button when they're in the camera, and they can see applications that leverage lens functionality. So I can even go, say, find more lenses, and that will bring up the Windows Phone Store filtered on applications that leverage camera functionality and that plug in as lenses. So this is a perfect example of an application being exposed in a contextually relevant manner. I'm taking a picture. I might be interested in seeing other applications that leverage this feature. So here's our Photosynth app, for example, and right away, I can actually go and start building this 3D visualization of my environment with this very, very cool, innovative app. This is probably one of the areas of most innovation right now in the mobile device space. You'll see it's stitching this sort of three-dimensional panorama that I can then take, and you can post it online and share it on SkyDrive or on a number of other sites as well. And then you get this sort of navigable experience where you can zoom in and out and go around. Okay. And so that was quite a bit on sort of the third-party application experience. So I have a lot of information here about our design principles and so forth, but I don't want to spend too much time on that. I'd rather just go through and talk a little bit more about building applications. So I'm just going to quickly go through this here. You can see all this online at the site that's listed there. You can also just go to dev.windowsphone.com if you're interested in seeing about our design principles. They are shared across Windows and Windows Phone. They are the same design principles. We have aligned our design principles. In some ways, they read kind of, and I'm just saying this from a developer perspective, they read a little like marketing, but if you investigate them a little bit more deeply, I think you'd agree with me that they aren't, because some of the attention to detail, for example, this pride and craftsmanship point is about, are actually not they aren't no-brainer things. They are something that does require work on the part of a developer to actually say, yes, I'm going to line everything up. And we now ship, you'll see this red boxes there in the second screen. That's now a grid that ships in every one of our templates, our project templates. You can just uncomment it and see it. That's an alignment grid that we recommend you align the controls on your page up against in order to create a look and feel that that aligns to the look and feel that we use in our applications. And I can show you where that is in the template. More with less, this is about reducing what's on the screen, having less Chrome. Content, not Chrome, is another way that that's. Flast and Fluid is about use of animation. We use animation in a very subtle way. Sometimes it doesn't necessarily seem so subtle. Some folks have said it's not subtle. A lot of work was done in focus groups and so forth to try to get a type of animation that was compelling and yet not intrusive and overloaded. So we expose all of our animations are available very easily to add to your own applications through our Windows Phone toolkit. And they have all the right timing and so forth. Many of our controls like Pivot and Panorama have it built in. But if you want to add page animation, the turnstile effect, the continuum effect, some of the other effects that we use, those are in our toolkit. This one's interesting, this authentically digital point, because obviously on other operating systems, one in particular, you have this notion of what's called skeuomorphism, where something will look like rich Corinthian leather or fine-grained wood and in the background. It looks like a real desk or a real index card. And we don't think that that's actually very useful in today's modern age. There's actually, when you think of things as this is a digital surface, there's so much more you can do, like convey actual information, and that's what's being shown here. These tiles convey information. The other thing that's a better example of authentically digital, I think, is this pivot control showing filtered views, because that's something that doesn't reflect anything in the real world. That's an electronic ability to quickly filter these dynamic views. So that's sort of the principle that's being denoted here. Win is one is sort of a reflection on the fact that we have Windows and Windows Phone both delivering a common set of user paradigms. And so we have a lot of people building applications for both and leveraging a lot of the same concepts across both, the same design language, and even end-to-end scenarios. For example, on Netflix, you can start on one and finish on the other, and you have what's called a continuous client experience. This principle is about trying to incent people to think in that way. I mentioned that Windows and Windows Phone have now moved to this shared core. There's a whole session on this. Highly recommend you go to this if you're interested at all in this topic. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. Windows Phone 8 was really about getting this first release out the door where we moved to this new core. And there are a set of components that are shared across both that enable developers to leverage some of the same code. Much of the same skills, if you think about Visual Studio, C Sharp, XAML, all of those skills are applicable across both. But really just some of the code at this point. Because we have a certain shared set of WinRT APIs across both. It certainly isn't the bulk of them. A certain shared set of .NET Framework APIs. And there's the ability for anyone to really create a shared solution that has projects that target both. But these things are not brain dead simple yet at this stage. And it certainly requires you to think in terms of how you architect your applications. And one of the models that we recommend strongly is the MVVM model. How many of you are familiar with MVVM? Model View View Model. Most of you have at least heard of it. How many of you use MVVM? And so that's a good number. And usually when I speak to audiences at that point, most of the hands go down. Because most of the sessions I've seen where people talk about MVVM, I've come away feeling like it's more work than it's worth. And a lot of consumer developers, this is probably where enterprise developers differ greatly from consumer developers, because consumer-focused developers are oftentimes working in a quick and dirty model whereby something like MVVM looks like a whole lot of work that doesn't necessarily have an immediate payoff. But if you're in a big enterprise where code sharing is the norm across many, many projects, across thousands of developers or hundreds of developers or dozens of developers, then it makes a lot more sense. And if you have a rigorous testing cycle, you know, obviously then it becomes a no-brainer that you need to have a model that is very easily accessible to a testing framework, and MVVM provides that. So, you know, highly recommend the session if you're interested in this. You know, what this means is a conjoined opportunity. People who are building and designing application experiences for Windows Phone can leverage a lot of that work to build experiences and leverage that same code to target Windows Phone. And so I think that that's actually an enormous, enormous benefit that is going to grow. We've said this quite a few times now, actually going all the way back to 2011 when Windows 8 was launched. We're driving alignment here as quickly as we can across as many areas as we can, as much as makes sense. And we know some things, you know, certainly there's pain in certain areas. We're driving to address that as quickly as we can. It's not an overnight thing, but it is certainly very, very high in our minds. So most of you have developer experience. I don't know how much I need to. How many of you used the Visual Studio developer tools for phone? About half. You know, we have a free set of developer tools. You go to our developer portal, dev.windowsphone.com, and you can download our free SDK. It's not really just an SDK. It's Visual Studio Express 2012 for Windows Phone, but we call it the Windows Phone 8 SDK, and so we have a bit of naming confusion there, and that's sort of unavoidable at Microsoft. I ask your forgiveness. But it's an amazing product. If you think about Visual Studio, this is a free version of Visual Studio with a large number of the features found in more expensive SKUs of Visual Studio, including a performance profiler, a device emulator, and now with Update 2 to Visual Studio 2012, you get unit test framework for Windows Phone. This is new in Update 2 that came out, this new unit test framework, an official unit test framework. We had unofficial ones floating around, but this is an official unit test framework for Windows Phone. You can even create a unit test framework project and so forth, and it's very, very, very nice. You get a free version of Expression Blend. You get the tools for unlocking retail devices. You do have to register on our portal before you can actually go and unlock a device. You can unlock 10 devices once you've done that. As an enterprise, you can as well. You get a different set. I can't remember off the top of my head what that is. But the portal is where all this starts. The SDK submission dashboard is all here. And samples are here, as well as all the documentation. Our documentation lives in sort of three areas. This design, develop, and publish is where those three categories are. And then communities, where you'll find the forums. Dashboard is where you manage the apps you've submitted. And all this documentation actually lives on MSDN, even though you see it in the context of the portal. If that confused any of you, I mean, this is sort of a shift at Microsoft. All of the different divisions are moving to this model where you basically are working on the portal for that group, but then when you click in, then you're on MSDN, but it's skinned to look like you're still on the portal. It's kind of confusing. As we try to drive convergence across several of our different areas, you'll see this is one of the areas where we know we want to drive more convergence. We're actually doing this in the Windows Phone documentation. We do share about 2,200 WinRT APIs, like I said. When you drill into the docs there, you're actually looking at shared docs. They are that identical, that we are actually sharing a lot of the documentation across those properties at this point. So let me just this is pro here. So if you have a higher SKU of Visual Studio installed and you install the SDK, it will augment your existing SKU. So if you have Pro or Universal or any of that, it will add phone development to that SKU when you install it. But for the person who doesn't have that, you get the Express SKU. And it's really just, the things that are missing in the Express SKU are things like the team server stuff, some of the more advanced features in areas like, I know one that hit me the other day was the ability to paste JSON as a class. I don't know if you ever used that one where you get JSON and you try to paste it as a class. You can't do that in the Express SKU. You have to go to the website to do that. But then, look, if I go in a new project, and you've probably seen this if you've done phone development, I just want to quickly touch on this, the number of different types of projects that we quickly provide you. And since this is the Express view, I'm just seeing phone projects here. I have a blank phone app, data-bound app, a class library, panorama app. This is, you know, a panorama control that's set up with design time data and runtime data to actually help you design and create an application that leverages the panorama control. You don't need to use this. You can add a panorama to any project, but these are projects that are there to help accelerate your development of these sorts of things. A pivot application. And one of the things we found early on was that we focused on pivot and panorama being sort of the concepts of our phone design system. But you don't have to use a pivot and panorama. In fact, you don't at all need to use those controls. They don't define this design system. They are available, but we found that a lot of applications overuse these. I know that I've seen some applications that, for example, detail information about different sets of languages or different states in the United States, for example, and it would have 50 pivots. You know, so and we've seen a lot of applications like that, and so, you know, clearly from a usability standpoint, you don't really want more than 8 if you can avoid it. Hopefully, more like 3 or 4. But the idea there being that, you know, it's like you give people a hammer. Sometimes everything looks like a nail. Well, so we gave people pivots and panoramas, and you can take it from there. So D3D and native. We're new in Windows Phone 8. And let me talk about this just briefly here, because what I want to say is, you know, look, the first and foremost reason we added this stuff was to get gaming in. And gaming accounts for, if you look at all mobile devices, mobile platforms, revenue generated from gaming accounts from somewhere between, depending on the study you're looking at, 65 to 70% of revenue generated in all mobile stores is from games. So we knew that we needed to we worked with lots and lots of game studios via our Xbox Live friends, and we knew that we needed to. XNA is fantastic. We love XNA, and we wish that, you know, the teams that own those sets of technologies were going to continue to evolve them. We're going to maintain and support them as long as we can from an app compat perspective. We have them in the Windows Phone 8 SDK, XNA, but we knew that we had to move to beef this up with something that was more accessible for a larger range of game studios and game developers. And that's why we knew we had to go to D3D. And what that led to is the place where we have the largest convergence with Windows today. We have some game studios telling us that they are sharing about 90% code across Windows and Windows Phone with D3D games today. So we know that this is actually a critical place. You are now seeing games appear on Windows Phone at the same time as they're appearing on Windows, as well as iOS and Android. And that's because of native support. Native support has also unblocked third-party middleware for game development. I know these topics are a little less relevant for enterprise folks, but I tell them to you because they are a critical component of the application platform itself. Unity, if you guys don't know about Unity, Unity came out of nowhere 2 or 3 years ago as this middleware tools platform environment for cross-platform game development, targeted initially at iOS and Android, and then they kept expanding out to everyone else. As of this year, just in March, they announced that 53% of all mobile games are built on Unity. And so now we have support for Unity in Windows Phone and Windows, and in some cases, cross-compiling a Unity game from iOS to Windows Phone will constitute changing a drop-down box to Windows Phone and pressing compile. So we're very excited about what this has meant to the platform, and we're seeing a huge acceleration in game development for our platform as a result. But native is not just about D3D and games. Yeah, it certainly was a primary reason we did this. But as I mentioned before, and we have a whole session on this later, it's a fantastic way for any application developer to leverage existing legacy code in a cross-platform manner. So if you have compute libraries that you've been using for one reason or another, SQL database libraries is another example of something like this, or if you're doing any type of image manipulation, that's another perfect example. There's a large list of types of scenarios that are fit here, and we have a session on this later today. It's a great way to share code in a cross-platform manner, a particularly across Windows and Windows Phone. And now you'll also see here D3D with XAML. As we did with XNA in Windows Phone 7.5, we gave people the ability to embed an XNA game in the context of a XAML application. There are certain things XNA wasn't very good at, and there are certain things that D3D is not necessarily that great at, that XAML is great at, particularly building pretty standard UIs, for example. And the idea here being, you know, if you want to manipulate text and create input and leaderboards and something like that, wrapping a D3D game with XAML could potentially be a very easy way to do that, and it was very easy for us to add that, so that's why that's there. And so that's the template system. And if you don't know about it, you can go in here and online, and when you're online, you can very, very easily access all our samples. And, you know, I don't know if you guys know about this at all, but I've found it invaluable at times. You don't have to go online at all or outside of the context of Visual Studio. You can just go in here and click on phone and say, I want something that, you know, consumes RSS. I can just type RSS like that, and it will eventually here bring up, oh, the Windows Phone Starter Kit for RSS. So it's very, very easy. We have hundreds and hundreds of samples we've published on. These correspond to samples published on code.msdn.com. They're not all from Microsoft Note. This is a shared source place, but many of them are. And if you are looking at one that is from Microsoft, you'll see here created by Microsoft. And you just click OK. How many people knew about this? Wow. So. You know, we're the kings of releasing features that people can't find. So if I've added value to you in any way, hopefully I've done this has been something valuable. There's tons and tons of samples here. So I know that, you know, when I'm doing development, the first thing I always do is I look for, did someone else do this before? All right. Now, when I go into a project, let's just open up a blank project just really quick. And then I'm going to move on because there's a couple other things I want to show before we run out of time. But we're giving away a phone, so don't go. Now, Solution Explorer over here, your XAML page over here. And then with Visual Studio 2012, we brought over a bunch of features from Blend. So clearly, Blend had a few things it was really great at, but we knew most people weren't using Blend. Blend came out around the time of WPF back in the day. And the idea was that, ooh, big enterprises, you know, they have a team of designers over here and a team of developers over here, and they work really differently, and we need a tool just for designers that works the way they do, and then they can share source, and then they can work together on it at the same time, and they can go back and forth. And, well, you know, just doesn't really work that way. Not too many designers really wanted to use Blend, I guess. But the thing is that Blend was really good at some things that you can't do in Visual Studio at all. Many of those things came over to Visual Studio in this release, like this document outline, for example, that lets you very easily navigate the XAML tree. I just think this is amazing. The other thing that we added here, like a bunch of the functionality here, like being able to change the container type. If I want to change a grid to a stack panel or scroll view, I can do it right there. The other thing I can do, you know, once I've added something like a list box or what have you, I can change the template too. So I can very, very easily go in and edit a long list selector template right here. We also got this, you know, orientation view, so I can change in the design view the orientation, the resolution. And resolution is a source of a lot of confusion for folks. The fact that we have three resolutions, it's because we've handled it so transparently for people. Our resolutions, two of them are the same aspect ratio, and one's really close. And the one that's really close, we just sort of add bars to. But for the other ones, we handle everything for you. So you don't have to do any additional work. But the thing is, if you want to, you can actually do things like optimize image assets for the higher resolution screens. And some game developers definitely do this, but not very many other people do that. And maybe you don't need to, but it's just something that you should know as we go to higher and higher, higher and higher resolution screens. You know, when you think about reaching or quality, you know, these are things to keep in mind. You can also change the accent color here. And if you didn't know, like styles in XAML, there's a whole set of styles that we ship with XAML that are specific to the phone that you can apply to automatically get things like accent color. So you don't need to make things, you know, a particular color. You say, you apply the style to the XAML and you say, I want this to be the accent color, then whatever the person picked as their accent color will be the color of that item on your screen. And that's a really cool thing to have. One thing I want to just point out here, one of the number one certification failures to this day remains, doesn't work on the white theme. You know about the white theme? Like you can have your screen be white or black in Windows Phone. And if you hard code text to white on the black screen, then someone makes their screen white, they can't use your app. So that continues to be one of the number one reasons certification fails. So now we have in the designer the ability to say, I want the light theme, and you'll see here's the light theme, and the text appropriately changed to black because it's not using a hard-coded style, it's using one of the styles. It's not using a hard-coded color. And so it's in here. The properties continues to be very, very large, and you know, there's a lot here, but we got the search box from Blend, so you can actually just type like you can in Blend, and you'll see here different styles and so forth, properties and events. You know, we do tend to give people 18 ways to do any one thing still, but it works mostly. Visual Studio is very well respected. Okay, so I haven't really gone through any of the new developer scenarios. And that was something I wanted to talk a little bit about. And we have 7 minutes left, and I wanted to leave folks time for questions. You know, in Windows Phone 8, we added native code. I talked about this. This enabled a number of different middleware providers, like Unity's the big one here. Havok is huge on the console. Autodesk is another huge one on the console. There's more, though. So we also we announced Marmalade. There's also Cordova, the HTML framework. Name's escaping me right now. PhoneGap, yes, please. I remember the new name that they're not using. We added these new template types. So the flip template was the one we have, but three different sizes. The iconic template, this is now super, super easy for a developer to implement. Before, you had to paint the image in your app. And then the cycle template, you can download the images in a background agent and have your template update dynamically in the background. But not just images, right? Like if you were composing images on the server that constituted some sort of information, you could do that too. Lock screen, this was added in 8. The ability to change all these different components on the screen, detailed status, quick status, and you can't force this on the user. Like I said, you can't ever force the user or spam the user. What you have to do is you have to adopt a dynamic prompting style in your app whereby you, on some event basis, decide to prompt the user and let them know you have certain functionality. And then you can give them a button to implement it if you want to, but you have to leverage it in this sort of soft-pedaling way. And it's always wise to let people know. This is actually an interesting point here. We were talking to developers about our trial mechanism. We have an API that lets you, if you have an app that you sell, you can release a trial version. And the thing about Windows Phone that's different from other people's trial versions is that the developer can pick however they want it to be a trial. It doesn't have to be time-based. It could be time-based. It could be feature-based. You could say you don't get this feature till you buy it. It could be level-based in a game. You can have a trial that has whatever creative mechanism you want. And we were finding some developers were having trouble converting to paid. And we looked at a bunch of these apps and we're like, why are they having trouble? And we noticed, they're not really prompting the user in any really dynamic way. Hey, you can go buy the app. So, there has to be this, there's a give and take amongst prompting the user too much and not prompting them at all. And so you have to tell people you have certain features is my point here. This gets to, you have to figure out how to do that. And if you look at a bunch of different apps, you can see different people take different approaches. Some people do it on first launch. Some people do it on the 15th launch or something. If you haven't done it already, they'll check, hey, has the tile been pinned? If not, then go say, hey, by the way, did you know I have a tile? So there's ways to do this that are smart. I have some demos here, which I could just show. There's 4 minutes left. I've talked about most of these things. Mapping, we have the NAP control. Drag and drop access to the whole NavTech map database. I mean, this is like amazing. Years ago, you would never get something like this for free. Of course, it's sort of de rigueur today to have a mapping component of your platform, but NavTech is a pretty amazing component, especially if you think about the offline map capability and the global availability of the maps. Larger global coverage of mapping data updated in a more frequent manner than on any other provider with offline map support for anyone in their own application, so you can provide this. And then continuous background execution was added in Windows Phone 8. That means if you have, we had the strict, so I didn't talk about our multitasking strategy. I assume most of you maybe know about it. We don't allow any app to just run in the background at any time as Android does, as Windows Mobile did. We have a balancing act. It's like everything else, right? Protecting the end user experience against the ability to do more things. Because if you let apps run willy-nilly in the background, they can potentially have an impact on the battery life, on the networking characteristics of the device, on the performance characteristics of the device, and we want to protect the great user experience. Windows Phone is the most tested operating system Microsoft ever released at the time. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of devices, maybe thousands and thousands of devices, all in locked closets running multitudes of scenarios, trying to eke out where performance bottlenecks exist and how to fix those. And if you read the reviews, this is the result of it. And we continue to do this today. And that level of rigor led to this model whereby we enable certain types of multitasking through background agents that can run on a periodic basis or on a task basis. Like, for example, you can say, if the phone is plugged in and on Wi-Fi, run this periodic task on a half-hour basis. But for map apps in 8.0, we realized we needed to add continuous background execution. When you are trying to find your way in the car with a navigation app and you get a phone call or you get a text message and you leave the application, you don't want the navigation to stop. And so we have continuous background execution for location apps in 8. And I've got a demo there for that too, but we don't really have time. Wallet, another new feature that Rob talked a little bit. Wallet is a new scenario mechanism for, you can think of this for any finance, banking, or loyalty program. We now support the ability to aggregate functionality in this hub. So you can have deals in here. You can have cards in here, credit cards, like PayPal. For PayPal and Groupon support this, so you can actually go and leverage this in that way. It enables users yet one more way to expose applications in a contextually relevant way. We need to talk about it more. IE10, so full IE10 on the phone. I could show you this demo where I drag a website over into the web browser control and it just works completely with all the JavaScript and everything. One of the mobile websites look fantastic on our phone, and a number of people have actually launched apps. There's an app called Web Apps that a third party did, which is just a directory of all the really great web apps out there that are basically mobile websites. They all look fantastic on the phone. NFC proximity, we've got this functionality, and speech API. There's a whole session on speech API. Speech API has three aspects that are really interesting. Voice commands, you don't have to be online to use voice commands. You, the developer, denote the vocabulary. The phone responds to it without any online activity. We also have full speech recognition. This does require the phone be online. Then we also have text-to-speech. And so this is speech synthesis. And your application can leverage that to speak out text that you want to have spoken out. Those are the three different types of speech we provide. And then, of course, in-app purchase and app-to-app communication via URL association, URI association. And that's about it for what we added. Really, enterprise is, there's a lot of other sessions on this, the device management and deployment piece, and Rob talked earlier about what was going on, but I want to leave you with some sites here. Really the key place to go is dev.windowsphone.com. There's a number of other sites listed there, but they're all available from dev.windowsphone.com. So I just want to make sure you're aware of that site. If you aren't developing for phone today, if you're currently developing with Microsoft technologies elsewhere, it's easier than ever for you to extend your skills to deliver apps and games on phone. And it's going to be increasingly easy to leverage that code to target both phone and desktop tablet windows. So I highly encourage you to go check it out. And thank you for your time, because I know that there are a lot of other sessions you could have gone seen at this time. There was a session on moving from BIOS to UEFI I know you were all interested in, that I was up against. I was really concerned. No, I know. I mean, I'm just trying to be funny. But we are going to give away a phone. So why don't we go ahead to the phone giveaway process? We have a unique... Yes, please. Please feel free to. I apologize for using up the time, but I am going to be here all week, too.
You got your Windows 8, your highly mobile contacts, your Arm, NRAL, and all this stuff.
You got your Surface, which is your slightly mobile towards desktop. Where is Xbox One? Is this an RT-based device? If so, does that mean that we like to play on Xbox One? So the question was about Xbox One and where it fits into this whole world of devices and services that we've talked about. We haven't talked very much about that. I'm not necessarily in a position to say very much, unfortunately, because I don't work on that team. And we all sort of are in our own little worlds to the extent we are. However, what I can tell you is that they have talked about Xbox One being based on Windows 8. Now, that doesn't mean there's going to be a public platform there yet. And they haven't made any news or announcements about that. But we are moving to a common set of technologies that could enable that sort of thing. But I there's nothing to announce, and I certainly am not announcing that.
What about Microsoft GG, my Gates class?
So you're inventing a product. Yeah, certainly we invest in research in tons of areas, and, we certainly, there's innovation going on everywhere. And we don't just want a copycat. We want to actually innovate in the areas that we think are critical. Phone is certainly the first computer for a majority of the world will be a phone. The first computer for a majority of the world will be a phone. There's just no, that is abundantly clear at this point. And so this is something that Microsoft is steadfastly dedicated to. It is the cornerstone of our future. We know that. And that is why we are converging in this direction. It is absolutely the case. I think that very few people would disagree with that statement. Yes? A legacy app from which platform? Oh, from like a Win32 app or a... It's gonna really depend, unfortunately. I don't have a better answer than that. If you look at Windows Phone, it descended from the Silverlight branch of .NET framework. So we do have C++ support. If you built an application in Win32 C++, it is possible for you to leverage some of that work. Now, which work and how much is going to depend on what you were doing and where. If it's a purely compute library, your odds are really good. But if you're doing UI work or something that's interacting with some of the device capabilities, or then things become more challenging. It's really hard to say. I think that there certainly is an opportunity there. That's about what I can, unfortunately I can't go much deeper than that. Well, I'm saying that there are opportunities. I'm not trying to say, and I apologize, I sound weaselly. But the fact is it is complicated, right? It depends on what you're doing and where, and whether or not there are libraries that are transportable in ANSI C. And, you know, look, C, you know how it goes, right? There's a lot of different areas where it gets... It is compliant ANSI C. I don't know to what extent it encompasses all the libraries that were previously available. If you give me your card, I'll certainly follow up. We're going to do the drawing. I think we have limited time to the next session, but you can follow up with me after the session. Okay.
All right, pick a card.
All right, it's the moment you've all been waiting for. Look, and before I pick this, I just want to remind you, please do go fill out an evaluation, because we do value your feedback, no matter how negative it will be. No, I know it won't be negative.
So what was the big announcement?
I was just excited about the 5.7%, but I didn't want to make... I mean, look, I'm not crowing about 5.7%. It's just that, look, we're clearly moving into third place here in the United States, and I've been working on this product for 4 years. I mean, I've been kind of killing myself for 4 years. So I'm 45, I can't do this anymore. But we are making a change. We're making a difference. It's huge. It's incredible. And so
somewhere around 113% year-over-year growth.
Yeah. It's larger growth than anyone else is seeing right now. All right, I see Tony Vigel. Oh boy. All right. And this is the phone. Here you go. All right. Thank you very much. Enjoy Tech Ed.